I think we should be recording.
Cool.
Okay. I'm here with Tyler Galato of Molecule to talk about VitaDAO, an organization aiming to do longevity biotech by democracy. Tyler, first, it's great to meet you, and thanks for taking the time to do this interview. How are you doing?
Great. Thanks so much for having me. Really appreciate the opportunity to chat with you.
Yeah. So could you talk about your role a little bit and what that is within this new company, VitaDAO?
Yeah. So my name's Tyler. As I mentioned, I'm the chief scientific officer and co-founder of Molecule, which is a company, a traditional company, whose sort of mission is to decentralize and democratize the drug development process. And over the past couple of years, we've been exploring different structures and processes, legal frameworks, technological frameworks to try to facilitate what you can call, let's say, a slightly more open source, more collaborative way of both funding and developing therapeutics. One that maybe bridges the traditional monopolistic sort of patent system with a more open source future, but without, let's say, compromising the ability to file for intellectual property and therefore sacrificing the ability to actually effectively commercialize drugs. And maybe just one small point on that. There's been a lot of movement recently in the therapeutic development space, thinking about sort of more open source frameworks for developing drugs, things like the Open Source Pharma Consortium, for example. But one of the areas where that space has really struggled is if you, for example, have a group of scientists develop a therapeutic in an open source way, and you have a bunch of people committing data to a GitHub repository. It becomes very difficult to incentivize the actual commercial development of that therapeutic because you often lack the sort of, let's say, market exclusivity that would be a sufficient incentive for those things. So Molecule has really been trying to think about how to bridge these two different sides, the sort of current system and, let's say, a more open source system. And one of the first experiments in that sort of framework is this concept of VitaDAO, which is not a traditional company. It's a decentralized autonomous organization, which might be a term that I would imagine over the next year people are going to be hearing a lot more of, sort of the same way a lot of people are hearing about NFTs now. 2 years ago, that was a super fringy technology. And the goal of VitaDAO is really to democratize access to longevity therapeutics development and try to create new structures to unlock, let's say, early stage innovation within the context of let's say, preclinical longevity therapeutics development, particularly that's happening at universities and is sort of in, let's say, a pre-startup stage, and figure out ways to allow members of the public, also experts, anyone with a general interest in longevity, to become actively involved in supporting that therapeutics development or many therapeutics development in a really engaging and active sort of way. So trying to find strength within a community that sort of collectively funds the development of these therapeutics. And then in exchange, that VitaDAO, which you can think of as sort of a membership collective or a membership organization, will own the intellectual property that's generated by those projects. And the members of that organization, with guidance from industry experts who can engage by many different mechanisms, will have a play a strong governance role in how that is actually commercialized, how it might be licensed, if IP is generated from it, for example. So it's really a sort of, it's not just an experiment, because I think that shouldn't be sort of seen as the goal, but it really is sort of a first experiment with these new structures and how they might be able to, let's say, promote innovation in the preclinical development space.
Yeah. And so Molecule is kind of like this, what people would think of as a typical centralized company, but with the goal of creating decentralized companies, and VitaDAO being one specific to longevity.
Yeah, so at the moment, Molecule is a traditional centralized company. Our goal is to progressively decentralize over time. At the moment, it's a relatively small operation. We have a lot of people who help us from around the world, a lot of advisors. We have developers who work with us from all over the world, and there certainly are some, let's say, decentralized components to our company, but at the moment we are still quite centralized.
Yeah, it's a really complex topic for people not familiar in this space. Like I tried to, I tried to explain VitaDAO to my fiance earlier this week, and she has no experience in the cryptocurrency world. It was really hard.
Yeah, I mean, this is something that we struggle with a lot too, and that we struggle with a lot at Molecule. And it's something that I think is going to become easier over time, because even in the past year, a lot of these concepts have become a lot more mainstream than they were a few years ago. But it's really, it's structurally a different way of thinking about organizations. It's a different way of thinking about things like intellectual property. One of the sort of I think about it as, you know, both advantages and risks in this sort of sense is there's quite a few innovations being stacked on top of each other. And that can be a strength in some cases, but it could also be create a little bit of a barrier to entry in terms of maybe someone's ability to rapidly understand what we're doing. I think maybe one of the easiest ways to tell someone about it, and if you wanted to, let's say, move all of the technical jargon away into the back end, a really simple way to think about it would be it's a membership organization that works to support the development of longevity therapeutics, where all of the members collectively govern those decisions, govern a treasury, how that treasury is distributed, and with a sort of flat organizational structure.
Yeah, I think that's a really good top line way to explain it, but it's kind of built on this right. The background is in the world of cryptocurrency, and I'm sure plenty of our readers are well versed in that space. We'll get to a little bit later. There's a lot of overlap between longevity and cryptocurrency. But for those who haven't, or I would say most have probably heard of it, right? Bitcoin price is skyrocketing right now. NFTs, they're making headlines left and right. But if that's all the exposure people have had, can you kind of before we even get into the weeds of VitaDAO, how would you introduce longevity enthusiasts to the world of cryptocurrency?
Yeah, so there's a couple of like key differentiations to make here, and I think there's a lot of, let's say, terminology that's thrown around interchangeably. You have things like cryptocurrency, you have things like blockchain, you have things like token economics, for example. All of these things are tied together through this background of blockchain, right? And blockchain, you could think of as at its simplest, at its like most reduced, really to just be sort of a database system. That would be a really simplified way to describe it. And then you have things like, for example, like the Ethereum blockchain, where individual cells within that database become programmable through things like smart contracts, for example. And these have lots of different implications. And then beyond that, cryptocurrencies are sort of the transactors of value within any of these sort of databases that are exchanging information or keeping track of transactions. Cryptocurrencies are something that allow you to exchange value or send currency, for example, to somebody in a sort of decentralized and trustless way that's not managed through a bank or a centralized authority in some way. And I think, I mean, the blockchain space, the cryptocurrency space is really interesting because, you know, everyone sort of maybe has a slightly different conceptualization around these technologies, what their benefits are. But really, one of the things that the space has excelled in tremendously is creating really interesting incentive structures, often through sort of what you could call, let's say, a subfield of economics, which is called token economics. And token economics are a token in the context of the blockchain space or the cryptocurrency space can be thought about as sort of a unit that can allow someone to do something. I mean, so it could be you can have a token for governance, for example, where by interacting with a particular blockchain and let's say burning a token that I've received, I can cast a vote, for example. Or you can have tokens that represent ownership or something. NFTs are non-fungible tokens. They're tokens that can represent a real world asset. And they're non-fungible in the case that, you know, they're not divisible in the same way that something like a Bitcoin is, which you can divide many, many times. And that's really useful because it means that you can represent something that's truly unique with that token. But so there's this whole sort of decentralized finance, DeFi space, this whole really interesting, economic engineering experiment that's going on right now in the context of the cryptocurrency and blockchain space. And there's a lot of innovation happening that I think at the moment is perceived to be quite superficial. You have, and when I say superficial, I mean, if you're not deep within that space, what you would probably look at and say is like, what is going on? Where is all this value being created? This must be a massive bubble. What is happening with inflation?
Yeah, Bitcoin's not real.
Hedging against the dollar. Yeah, exactly. It's magic internet money. And to be completely fair, there's a lot of truth to a lot of that. There are a lot of projects in the space. I mean, there's a lot of good projects in the space, but there's also, because it's a space that fundamentally lacks, high degree of regulation, you also have people who are invariably exploiting that. There's a lot of hype around it. There's a lot of people FOMOing into the space that maybe don't necessarily understand what they're doing. They just look at charts and they say, cool, chart goes up, I buy in, I make money. These are things that maybe are quite relevant right now and maybe serve to bring people into the space. But the real innovation that comes from this space are sort of lies in the technology and what it's capable of unlocking. And I mean, something like a smart contract, for example, is such a profoundly powerful piece of technology that a lot of people don't fundamentally understand the implications of yet, especially in terms of creating, things like decentralized systems where you can basically set something up to happen and there's a verified way that it happens. And if it doesn't go that way, like, almost to the point where you could replace lawyers, for example, and have a huge amount of automation on different processes, the way that people interact. I don't want to go super deep into
that. Well, so is it fair to say, maybe rather than characterize VitaDAO as in the cryptocurrency space, maybe a better way to put it would be in the blockchain space?
Yeah, I think that's a better way to
and some of the some of the key benefits, I think what you touched on a little bit there of being in this blockchain space is cutting out the middleman in a lot of cases. You can think of the blockchain as it's been described to me, and my experience is very surface level, is you can kind of think of it as like a automated decentralized ledger.
Yeah, exactly.
Transactions, right? And there's various benefits to having that process beyond the blockchain. We've also mentioned the decentralization a couple times, but I don't think that term is necessarily intuitive to people who are in the space. So just like, we don't want to spend too much time on it, but like, what is decentralization and why is that a benefit? Why is that a pro?
Yeah, so I mean, if you think about conventional company structures, conventional hierarchies, right, you typically have some sort of centralized power. And then maybe you have, if you think about like an organizational chart, for example, you have someone at the top and then people underneath of them. If you think about decentralization, it's sort of having, all of these elements, all of these individuals or nodes or servers, however you want to think about this, being connected in some way with a high level of redundancy and no way of anyone to exploit the system, leverage it, or exert more of a centralized authority or power over that organization. I think the reason that VitaDAO, for example, is why decentralization is attractive is because we're trying to create really this idea of a democratic drug development process. And it's not just that cool, blockchain is a nice way to do this or something. It's that the technology is actually the thing that makes that an absolute truth, right? So it's not like saying, cool, I'm going to set up this flat organization and people must take my word on it that it's a flat organization. It's that the fact that it's a flat organization is actually baked into the technology itself, and nobody has the ability to override that, which is a particularly interesting concept. It's when you get into token-based voting, for example, it means to actually trigger a smart contract to make a decision, like to distribute funds, for example, there must be a technological consensus reached by people actually interacting with a smart contract on the blockchain. So this becomes extremely powerful in preventing, let's say, bad actors or people from potentially trying to create certain power structures within an organization. But yeah, decentralization is particularly powerful, in my opinion, for its democratizing effect and it sort of, yeah, its ability to distribute power very, very broadly. And therefore, I think the thinking is around that, that if you distribute power very broadly, and if you have a really egalitarian structure, the outcomes tend to start to serve everyone better instead of just a few central people who might be, yeah, leveraging something.
Yeah, I think a really recent current event, I think, illustrated this really well, where if you followed the whole Wall Street Bets saga, yeah. Robinhood is a great example of this centralized company where just power is kind of concentrated in this place, and they're actually able to shut down trading to their users, and in some case, even sell some of the Wall Street Bets users' stocks for them without their permission, which is not something that could happen on the blockchain. But we could get really, really deep if we wanted to on that. Let's get back to VitaDAO specifically. So there's actually been quite a lot of overlap between the longevity space and the blockchain, like especially with a lot of big donations have come from some big names, such as Vitalik Buterin, who's one of the, if not the biggest name in the space, has made some donation. What do you see as some of the parallels between the two, and why do they kind of attract similar thinkers?
Yeah, I mean, I think they both represent extremely disruptive ways of thinking. I think they're both trying to pioneer a different framework for the future, maybe relative to the status quo. One of the reasons that I was attracted to biogerontology, for example, was that I was working in oncology and experimental therapeutics in the context of developing drugs for various cancers, pancreatic cancer, glioblastoma, and we were working on sort of mechanisms of chemotherapy resistance. And over time, I found that in the context of the sciences, I was becoming quite frustrated with the way that we were approaching individual disease areas. So this idea of sort of silo, let's treat breast cancer, let's treat pancreatic cancer, let's treat a single driver mutation in the context of one cancer. I thought aging research and biogerontology and longevity were really attractive because of this idea, well, how about we understand DNA damage and repair at a higher level and figure out ways to actually intervene in that process so you could prevent all mutation, for example. I think you have a lot of dreamers in the field. You also have your sort of transhumanist communities. I mean, the longevity space, I think, goes from very academic to very fringy. And I love the space for that. And I think you find the same in crypto. You have your developers and your technology people, and you have your sort of dreamers, but they're all tied together by this belief that there's a better future that technology can help us sort of engineer. I think it was definitely a natural overlap between the two spaces.
Yeah. I would also add they both kind of have a bit of a chip on their shoulder and have faced a lot of resistance from the status quo with the traditional finance and traditional disease-specific approaches to medicine.
Exactly.
So like personality-wise, right, it's a really great match between the two. But what about like in terms of actual functionality? Like in general terms, what is VitaDAO, and why is longevity and the blockchain complementary when you bring them together?
Yeah, so I mean, you could start, let's say, a conventional biotech company, or you could start a longevity fund, for example, and with a similar values and mission in terms of its ability to, let's say, advance preclinical stage longevity therapeutics. What you couldn't do with those sort of structures or have really, really broad participation from the general public. And one of the things that blockchain allows you to do, or really the sort of the tokenomics around VitaDAO, or this idea of creating this decentralized structure, is it allows you to tap in very actively to a very large community of enthusiasts, of experts in the field, people who might want to get involved in the day-to-day governance. And one of the things from an incentive structure that decentralized communities have been really good at, I think you can see it, I mean, I don't want to go too deep into the NFT space right now in general, but there's basically, I think there's a huge effect that can be gained by bringing together 2,000, 3,000, 4,000, 10,000 people around a common cause. And that is very difficult to do with a typical startup structure or a fund structure or something like that. So really, I think the best way to think about it is that blockchain or cryptocurrency is something that from a framework perspective allows you to rather easily spin up a decentralized organization where you have power distributed among many different people with a common goal. And that's the primary reason for using blockchain technology in this context. Now, there's other reasons as well, which I think we'll get into later if we begin to talk a little bit about NFTs and maybe the DeFi space. But you know, one of the things that we've seen over the past 20 years in the context of drug development and biopharma R&D in general is that there's really this sort of innovation crisis that's happening. Our technology for drug discovery is getting better and better. There's a term called Eroom's Law, which is Moore's Law backwards. It was coined by someone called Jack Scannell, who sort of described this interesting problem around innovation. You have technologies getting much cheaper, your ability to sequence the genome has gotten exponentially cheaper, even outpaced Moore's Law, yet we're discovering less drugs and drug development is becoming more and more expensive. And we believe that part of the reason for this comes down to actually the way that both the organizational and business structures and intellectual property structures exist in drug development in a lot of cases and the incentives that exist. So VitaDAO is really this idea that, you know, we're not 100% sure yet if this is a better way to develop drugs than the status quo, but it's certainly a different way. It's a way that really deserves to be tried, in our opinion. Will not be without problems. I think it would be really fair for someone to say, like, you know, there's also very good reasons to have centralization. You know, if there's very good reasons to have leadership or clear leadership and clear decision-making abilities within an organization. But we're really excited to see how this experiment plays out and if we're able to really tap into a powerful community that's able to do things that more quickly and more agilely than, let's say, the conventional biopharma space would be able to.
Yeah, I don't think you'd have a tough time arguing that the current drug development process is efficient, right? And
exactly.
That it's being done in the best way possible, right? And so this is a dramatically different way to do it. Like the DAO, so the second half of VitaDAO, DAO, I don't think we've actually defined that yet. That's a decentralized autonomic organization. More specifically, how does a DAO work?
Yeah, so basically anyone can join the DAO. They can join the DAO through a couple of different mechanisms. One mechanism is by contributing funds to the DAO and receiving tokens. And those tokens allow members to engage in governance functions within the DAO itself. And a governance function could be anything from, let's say, deciding on how the treasury, for example, spends its money. In the context of VitaDAO, there's a lot of different decisions that someone could help, you know, might engage in on things like, you know, what an intellectual property strategy looks like, how many projects should be funded over a certain period, how projects are evaluated. But basically, anyone can join this by contributing funds in which they would receive tokens or by contributing work. And so for example, another laboratory or a service provider, a contract research organization could also join the DAO by saying, we will provide you with preclinical development services. We will run qPCR experiments for you or something like that in exchange for a certain number of Vita tokens. And those tokens themselves can, you know, ideally in the long term, begin to reflect the value of the assets that VitaDAO has within its portfolio. So beyond just serving as purely as, let's say, a utility for governance, they also, in the same sense that, let me think about the right way to phrase this, like, if VitaDAO is very successful over the next 10 years, it might go on to fund 50 to 100 different projects and therefore hold within that DAO IP around many different projects that have been funded. And by having that token or being a member, everything within that DAO is collectively owned by all the members. So it creates sort of a very efficient way to be able to deploy capital quickly, get things done, and support, let's say, a common cause. DAOs are typically used, I mean, they've been used for a long time in the context of creating, let's say, pools to be able to develop new applications on Ethereum, for example, where a bunch of people come together and they say, you know, we want to bring together a huge community of developers, tap into all their skills, co-develop software together, decide how that software is governed, and all collectively benefit from the software that's created. They've also been used as sort of investment vehicles in the context of the NFT art space. You have things like Flamingo DAO, for example, where you have a bunch of people pooling together money, and now they're using this as sort of like a fund to purchase different pieces of art, and all the members get to collectively vote on what art is purchased, when it should be sold, how it should be priced. So it has this ability to, let's say, democratize certain structures that have typically been inaccessible to a lot of people, like, for example, something like a fund, and also allow people to participate in those structures without needing to have, let's say, a ridiculous amount of capital at hand. You know, if I said, you know, my goal is to make sure that new startups are created in the longevity landscape around new longevity therapeutics, I'm going to go out and raise for a longevity fund or a biotech fund. The amount of capital that I would need to have access to do that is, I mean, yeah, really, really significant compared to what most right. people would be able to
right.
to so play like, around with.
So like being a member of a DAO is kind of like owning stock in a company if the stock actually gave you power over the direction of that.
That's the fundamental difference. I mean, yeah, that's the fundamental difference and the thing to differentiate and where the power also lies as well. It would be, you know, any of the let's say successes or benefits that are ultimately derived in the long run from VitaDAO are a function of the effort of its community and its members, and not a manager in a centralized company who's maybe oftentimes behaving in a different way than stockholders might want, or you know incentivized quite differently. So yeah, that's a good way to think about us.
And so the other, I would say, key tool in VitaDAO's toolbox that we've briefly skimmed on but haven't gone in depth on would be the NFTs, these non-fungible tokens. And these are a super hot topic right now, especially maybe a little bit too much. Maybe there's a little bit of there's definitely a lot of hype. I won't say too much, but there's definitely a lot of hype right now. And if you're just following the news,
I think there's too much. I will say there's too much hype around it. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's incredible, but yeah, it's crazy at the moment.
Well, if you're just following the news, right, what these probably seem like is tools for celebrities to sell virtual stuff to their fans, right? I've kind of had it described to me as a parallel to an autographing an item to make it more special and then sell it. Which doesn't really seem to fit with what we've been discussing so far with VitaDAO. So how will VitaDAO utilize NFTs?
So, I mean, I think if you really didn't look into the space at all, it could just seem like people were selling JPEGs for $7 million and just seem like this completely crazy thing that makes absolutely no sense. What's really powerful about, so I mean, I'll touch on the art use case quickly, maybe just because I think it's valuable for people to understand this, but what it has to really do with is ownership, right? It's around ownership of something that has a certain scarcity or a certain rarity. And so, for example, in the context of digital art, you're basically, it could be thought of as something like a certificate of authenticity, but it's something that can also be tied to really, really powerful economic mechanisms. So for example, every time that NFT trades hands, for example, even in secondary markets or from a sale that's ongoing, there could be programmatically in the smart contract that's linked to that NFT, a fee that's always going back to the original creator. It's a way to create, I think in its most optimistic use case, it's a way to create really fair revenue for creators, artists, and people to have some traceability and some provability around the provenance of a particular piece of work. Molecule as a company, separate from VitaDel, has been quite deep in the NFT space for about 2 to 3 years now. And why that is because what NFTs allow you to do theoretically, although this hasn't been done in many practical use cases yet, is bring real world assets into the blockchain space, into the DeFi space, and ultimately into the metaverse. And so from a very sort of high level perspective, what that means is if you took something like a patent on a therapeutic and you attach that patent to an NFT, which we're currently working with a group of lawyers to create this framework right now to be able to attach real world intellectual property rights to NFTs as opposed to art, and this is obviously maybe a less playful use case, but something that we believe will have the power to not only affect the therapeutic space, but just more broadly the intellectual property space. You could, for example, take that NFT of a patent, move it into structures like DAOs, purely from a technology perspective, and then be able to plug that patent into the decentralized finance ecosystem. You could, for example, collateralize it. You could transfer ownership very easily and digitally to another party, or within the context of this DAO, you could even fractionalize ownership in it between many different people. So from a very practical perspective, what the NFTs in the context of VitaDAO really allows you to do is take real world legal processes, licensing processes, assets, and be able to move them into a digital space to integrate into the same, let's say, governance technology that is being used to run this DAO. So it's really a process of actually creating a technological way by which members of the DAO can interact with that intellectual property and make decisions around it.
So like a musician could take a song, right, and have a representation of that on the blockchain and sell that directly rather than going through the megalith of the music development industry.
Totally. Or you could take
a patent or a data set or something like that and represent that on the blockchain and then exchange it through this other powerful tool, use the blockchain to actually move around, basically.
Exactly. And so with things like data, if you attach a data set, for example, to an NFT, and there are specific technologies that allow, you could basically say only, wallet addresses that are members of VitaDAO and have basically a connection to the VitaDAO smart contract also have access to this particular data set that's linked to that address. So it just allows you to create, it really allows you to bring these things into the digital realm in a way where there doesn't need to be a centralized power that's monitoring things like data access, for example, or the ability to, let's say, monetize a certain data set. It allows us to say, you can attach this to this NFT, it can go into this structure, and now, for example, wallet addresses that are holders of Vita tokens and therefore members of this DAO have access to that, for example. Mm-hmm. And with patents, there's a really strong use case for licensing in general with smart contracts. This is something that I think you're going to be seeing happening a lot more, a combination of smart contracts and NFTs. But the easiest... This isn't like, I don't want it to be seen as like, I think people could look at something like VitaDAO and be like, longevity, NFT and blockchains. Like, it sounds really buzzy and hypey, but there's, in all of these cases, there's like a very specific technological use case for these technologies. And I think they're often also quite different than what people are sort of familiar with. So for example,
even if they're overhyped, there's still reason for the hype.
100%.
Okay, so like for any regular startup company, centralized company, decentralized company, in the longevity space or whatever market you're in, the first step is fundraising. Getting the to actually get the project off the ground. So have there been any decisions made for RitaDAO, how this is gonna go?
Yeah, so I mean, there's certain frameworks that are already in place with in terms of like how the fundraise is actually going to be carried out. So the sort of mechanics using a balancer liquidity bootstrapping pool, which people can look up and learn about it if they're interested. It's a way to create a sort of a market with either, you know, even potentially very low market caps and bootstrap initial liquidity into that market. It's sort of a tool within the decentralized finance ecosystem. People will have to can sort of stake into that pool and provide liquidity to it. People will also be able to, through that, purchase Beta tokens. We have initial working groups that have kicked off looking more deeply into, let's say, combining fair launch principles. So, you know, making sure that there's not, for example, a pre-sale where you sort of pre-select the people who will get to buy Beta tokens, and also ensuring that there is, let's say, that the mechanics of the system and the economics of the system exist to serve, let's say, the goals of the structure primarily, and not speculators and things like that. One of the key things that's really important with tokenomics and setting up a structure like this is doing it in such a way that it really serves the use case that you're going for and can't be, let's say, easily exploited or something like that. So one of the things that we're relying on is basically through the community, setting up working groups on how the tokenomics should be structured, how much we're raising, what a single Vita token should cost, what that confers in terms of governance rights. And all of that is still very actively ongoing, but should be finalized within the next 4 weeks.
That's a huge point of the launch, right, is a huge point of, I would say, contention in the DAO space. So it's really good that you guys are keeping, fairness top of mind for that. And like pre-sale is kind of like a big warning sign if people are looking into investing in the space.
I think it's really, you can. Once a DAO is set up and running and the smart contracts are in place and the raise has been, you know, everything's sort of gone through, it's actually very difficult to change things or say, oh, maybe we want to do things differently, or maybe we should have done X or Y. I mean, of course, members can always vote on proposals to change the way things work, but getting the launch right and the initial structure right and the governance rights right is really the thing that sort of determines if the structure is going to be viable and successful in its long-term mission. And Molecule, my company, and you know, as you know, my business partner Paul and I are sort of initiators of this DAO along with several other people, but you know, our role will be as a service provider role to VitaDAO. We'll be providing the framework to turn data sets and intellectual property into NFTs. We'll also be providing, let's say, a funnel to certain longevity projects through relationships that we've built up in the space. But in the long term, the DAO can, you know, if the DAO wanted to use a completely different service provider, they have the right to do that. And the DAO should ultimately be set up in part with the community that it's going to be serving. So that's why, I mean, there's a lot of these questions that people have been asking recently that I would love to have like really concrete answers to, but unfortunately a lot of the things are still, you know, very much like work in progress that's happening, you know, through the community itself.
And I'll just add to that, one of the most interesting parts of this to me anyway is if you kind of think of VitaDAO as like a startup company, right? Startup companies are funded exclusively through venture capitalists. And there's no way for the individual investor, the little guy, to get their foot in the door or put up investment in startup companies. I think in the US, it's actually not allowed. It has to be, you have to have a certain registration in order to invest in a startup company. So the fact that VitaDAO is kind of like making this available to the little guy, I don't know, that's just really exciting.
Yeah, it's the thing that's also really exciting to us, and like the thing that we've been, I think this is going to be, I mean, this is maybe a slight tangent, but like, you know, part of the world that we imagine, even with Molecule, is like, what would drug discovery or drug development look like if the people funding it and the people who actually own the intellectual property were patients themselves? What would insulin look like if it was collectively owned and funded by diabetics? How would decisions mm-hmm. around that be made? What would access look like?
Yeah, very different. Very different if I had to guess.
Very different. Yeah, you know, exactly. And so it's sort of this like, you know, I'm from the US originally. I'm living in Europe now. I come from a very US-centric way of thinking about healthcare and the sort of problems that exist, some of which are quite unique to the US, but I think speak very generally to the global pharmaceutical landscape. I think the prospect of having patients, the public, directly funding and directly owning and directly governing things as vital as therapeutics is one of the concepts that has the possibility to actually change this system that is extremely rigid, extremely resistant to change, has a lot of vested interests. And maybe it doesn't serve its core stakeholders so well, you know, like patients at the end mm-hmm. of the day. And one of the reasons I was so fascinated by the space and fascinated by decentralized structures and the sort of DeFi space and all of this were really providing a technical and sort of legal framework to make that thing that you're talking about possible. And I think that's one of the profound innovations with this. And where I think we're going to see over the next 10 years as these systems come into maturity and the sort of hype cycle around them dies and all of the teams that were in the space for hype sort of die away, and the people who have been building for a long time and really are fundamental believers in the technology, all those ideas start to realize, I believe it's really going to change the world, you know, in a lot of different ways. I think it's an early and exciting time to be in the space.
Yeah, I agree. And it kind of, it happens in cycles, right? And kind of in a boom, we're in a boom cycle right now. And then there's kind of like this great filter in the bust cycle. And then those kind of projects reemerge the next boom cycle as the big winners. But to move on, well, I guess the next step, right, after that funding is acquired, is to deploy it, right? And we expect it'll be deployed for longevity research.
Yeah.
Which I would say at that early stage is typically viewed more as a donation rather than an investment. The members of the DAO community, should they be viewing this more as a donation or is it more like a investment?
Yeah, I mean, so it's not a donation, but I also don't, it's not an investment in the sense that you are providing capital for something that someone else is going to do with your money and you expect to get a certain return on that money. The benefit or the upside that VitaDAO can realize is a function of the efforts of its members and participation in that structure very actively, which would separate it from, let's say, a conventional investment into an index or fund where there's someone managing your money and decision-making around your money. And it sort of rests on other people to be able to derive some sort of return from that. So it's certainly not a donation. I don't know if you can think about it in conventional terms as an investment as we think about investments, because the mechanism is really through governance, which is mm-hmm. quite different. You have to do something actively as a member in this community. Which is, for example, vote on things related to governance. Mm-hmm. But yeah,
so you're buying membership, exactly.
But the other key thing to realize is that, you know, there's a difference between the longevity. VitaDAO's mission is not to just support basic research into the fundamental mechanisms of aging. It's actually to support therapeutics development that does have a potentially commercializable angle and can generate intellectual property, which VitaDAO can then, you know, decide what to do with. They could contract out, you know, a biotech company to produce that drug. There's many different things that they can do, but it shouldn't be seen as, you know, a grant funding body that exists in the context of course, I mean, I fundamentally believe in that mission, but the goal here is to actually try to create, you know, a sustainable sort of, let's say, revenue stream for VitaDAO itself to allow that structure to continuously go on and fund other projects. So in a perfect world where this concept was, you know, operated really smoothly and was successful, Vita DAO, the structure itself, would go on to fund many different projects that were trying to let's say, develop pioneering technologies in the longevity space. Those could be, you know, diagnostics as well. They could be new biomarker tests, for example. Those things, Vita DAO would then hold the intellectual property generated from those projects its fund. Those projects would be commercialized, and that revenue would flow back to Vita DAO itself, and members could decide what to do with that further revenue and hopefully continue to fund additional projects. So in a perfect world, it would become something maybe akin to, you know, a self-sustaining organization that had the power to continuously fund and develop in the space without needing external injections of capital from philanthropists or things like that.
Yeah. And so it seems like there's still a lot up in the air, right? I've been following the Discord closely, and you guys have been getting tons of great feedback and suggestions so far, but it seems like a lot is still to be decided up to these working groups. The decisions before the decisions, right? The DAO is the decision-making machine, but in order to get it running, some decisions have to be made. Could you talk a little bit about the working groups and maybe what things besides the stuff we've already covered, like what else is finalized so far?
Yeah, so the working groups are operating on a variety of topics. Those topics are legal, which covers, for example, the legal around the DAO itself, its ability to file for intellectual property, what sort of rights it has as an organization, the IP NFT framework that's being pioneered from a legal architecture sort of perspective. There's the tokenomics, which comes down to, for example, the fundraise amount, the distribution, for example, what sort of time frame the fundraise happens over, what is it capped at, the mechanism by which people participate. There's another working group that is on the organization and governance rights. So working out things like what sort of rights a token holder has, what rights do somebody that joins the Discord have that is not necessarily a token holder? Do we differentiate between a general community member that wants to help out with the project but maybe doesn't hold tokens? What is the relationship to service providers to the DAO, contractors for the DAO? How is administration handled within these organizations? How are proposals voted on? You know, we're building a whole custom front end and back end for this that will look essentially like a web app in Web3, where proposals will be voted on by members. There's a certain amount of the community that will be run via Discord, certain working groups that will be run via Discord, and then actually a lot of front and back end infrastructure that members will be able to interact with. So all of those components are quite far along in their development stage. I think we're posting updates about the technology development in Twitter and have some information around the progress that the working group has made. But the plan at the moment is that those should be finalized by about the third week of April, with all of the final decision making in place for the launch of the organization itself and the initial fundraise. And the not far off. We're quite close. There's a certain number of things that I think have been more or less decided so far, but I can't really speak about them yet because the working groups need to basically finalize the decisions and put pen to paper. So I just don't want to. And there still is, what's really interesting around this is, these working groups stimulate a really active debate between people around the right and wrong way to do this. What's really interesting is we're sort of in like a frontier space. There's no reference point for this project. There's no one that's done sort of quite the same thing. So, you know, in a lot of cases, by my very nature, like if I wanted to know, like, what is the best way to do this, I would go and I would look at precedent and I would look at sort of like, other frameworks that have been created and learn about what worked and what didn't. But unfortunately,
I hope that Vita DAO someday becomes the giants that other similar projects will stand on their shoulders. Aren't any yet.
No, I hope so too. I hope it's. I will be super I will be super excited if we make a contribution to the longevity space that is measurable and significant. If this moves things along, you know, from a therapeutic perspective, or if it inspires other people to start similar structures with similar goals, like, I think in that sense, it will have, served its purpose and be successful. So,
yeah, it's certainly definitely an experiment worth conducting.
Yeah, I think so too.
We're running short on time, but just very quickly, if people want to sort of get involved, or what's the best way to follow the VitoDAO progress, if that's all they wanted to do was just keep tabs on what's going on?
So I'm probably joining the announcement channel on Telegram and also our active Telegram group. I mean, I would encourage people to like engage with the project, to ask questions, mm-hmm. to become a part of the community. If you just wanted to purely follow progress, the Telegram announcement channel, the website, the Discord are fine places to do that. But yeah, I would encourage
Twitter,
anyone. Twitter as well. Twitter, Telegram, and Discord are the three primary places where we're engaging with the community at the moment. If you want to have a slightly more active role and maybe participate, like, you know, have conversations with us and other people in the community and ask questions and poke holes in it and contribute intellectually to the project, I would really encourage anyone to become actively involved on Discord. That initial community that's joining Discord now is probably going to grow into the community that seeds the initial DAO. And therefore, like, yeah, I mean, people can have, you can have as much of a voice in this as me or anyone else. And it's, yeah, I think that's what's really cool about it. Joining this project is not like, it's not like supporting it. It's like, cool, let's build this together. You know what I mean? Which is,
yeah. And so what if instead of just following, if they wanted to donate, say, their time or their expertise or skills?
Yeah, so we have a form. If you join our Telegram and our Discord, there's a link to a form that you could fill out with sort of your skill set, what your background is. You could even potentially get involved in working groups. And there's not just working groups that will basically carry on and then conclude when the DAO launches. There's long-term working groups on how, for example, how we find projects, what projects are supported. We have people like Aubrey de Grey, for example, who are going to be active in these working groups. And people like Keith Comito, and it would be an amazing chance for you to interact with those people, see how decisions are made, and contribute intellectual capacity. And this goes super broad. If you're a graphic designer, if you're a developer, if you're a Solidity developer, and you want to help create the smart contracts for this in the long term, I mean, there's so many opportunities to get involved and help. And I think the power is within the community. So if there's any skill set that anyone has that they think might suit the project in some way, join our Discord, get in touch, fill out the Google form, and we'd love to work with you.
Yeah, we'll definitely make sure to include all those links with the recording or the write-up or however we get this out to the public, we'll make sure those are available. Awesome. So Tyler, like on behalf of Lifespan.io, thanks so much for your time and for answering all these questions and explaining this to us.
Yeah, thanks so much for your interest and for speaking to me. It's really a pleasure. I also, I've been a supporter of Leaf for a long time and a huge fan of the work that you guys do in general and the advocacy and education that you bring to the space. So it's really, it's a privilege to get to speak with you.
Yeah, thank you. We'll be in touch and we'll be following closely.
Cool. Awesome. Thanks so much.
Yeah. Bye.
Cheers.